schools is one of the dumbest and most dangerous religions in the history of planet Earth. And those are the nice things we say about it. And we have a lot of videos we've put out, over 150 different titles, I believe, on creation, evolution, dinosaurs, etc. You can get those by going to our website, drdino.com, drdino.com. Or you can instant message us today if you want to get a hold of us and ask your question, make your comments, etc. Dr. Dino Live, drdino.live. Am I up on online, Jonathan? You already clicked my little man here?
I haven't clicked your little man
yet. Well, it looks like it did it automatically. Automatically, I'm on. So, you can instant message us your questions, comments, etc. Dr. Dino Live, that's AOL Instant Message, America Online. And we'll be glad to take your questions. Or you can call us, 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, extension 136.
Not only that, we're going to have a brand new newsletter going out tonight. So any of you out there who would like to be on the email newsletter list, go to drdino.com, drdino.com, and sign up. Put your email address in there, and you should receive it tonight or tomorrow.
You can't beat a deal like that. Some really interesting news in there, as well as a section we're going to start doing in our we call it our Every Once in a While newsletter, because we send it out every once in a while. And it's going to have we're going to take a different news article from time to time and comment on it. My wonderful, sweet, non-caustic, absolutely 100% correct comments on the real view of the news from the Bible perspective. Okay, let's see. If you want to call in, we'll take your calls in just a second, calls and or instant message at Dr. Dino Live. Meanwhile, I'll read a few testimonies, make a few announcements, and then we'll get started on the program. Our video series that a lot of people want and comment on has been retaped probably 25 times. I just came back from Quebec, Canada yesterday, where I taped the parts 1, 2, 3, 4 in French. No, je ne peux pas say. I had an interpreter, an interrupter, I mean. Pastor Plante did an awesome job. He translated the seminar about 9 years ago when I did it in French. Great guy. Been a friend of mine for years and years. Fluent in at least Canadian French. Now, the French, look at the French, I think the Canadian French is, you know, hillbilly. You know what
I
mean?
I did. I got to speak with some a Brazilian today, and it's really interesting. Portuguese in Brazil is so incredibly different than Portuguese in Portugal. I actually cannot understand a whole lot of the Portuguese. So it's very much different.
Well, I'm speaking in Spain in a few months, and it'll be the real Castilian Spanish instead of the normal Mexican Spanish. So I know just enough Spanish to know there's a difference between the two, but I don't know that it'll matter to me. I'll have a interrupter for that one, too. So if you want to get a hold of the program here, get in quick. Almost every day we've been having to leave people hanging with unable to get to answer their instant message. We're sorry. We try to get to as many as we can. I talk very fast, and some people would accuse me of talking even faster than I think. That may not be good. So let's do a few testimonies here. Jonathan, I got the folder, don't I? Here we go. Okay. People write us that see our videos, our award-winning video series on creation, evolution, and really, really enjoy it. Most of them. Okay. Here's one from Anonymous. Dr. Hovind, your DVDs have changed me and my husband's life! ! We understand the Bible more than ever. We couldn't get answers even at church, but you are good and made everything so clear. Thanks forever! And 5! Well, good. Oh, it's Natash. Boy, that's a strange name. Natash something or other. Anyway, sounds Russian. Good. Glad you enjoyed it. No frowny faces today, Jonathan. I'm looking through the folder here, hoping to find some. These are all the testimonies, and everybody loves us today. Not that way every day, though, is it?
Not consistent, no.
No, no, there are days when they don't love us at all. Here we go. From Cherie. Cherie says, Dr. Hovind, I enjoy your website very much. Now, Jonathan, you get to take credit for that one.
Trying not to, actually.
Can you pat yourself on the back? I can't reach you from over here.
No, without grunting.
Okay. I enjoy your site very much. Although I cannot believe the negative responses you receive. Oh, Cherie, some of them we can't even publish. We get some people that don't like it. It says, do these people have blinders on? Cherie, yes, they do. The Bible says they're willingly ignorant. 2 Peter chapter 3. People that don't understand the creation and the flood are willingly ignorant. You can look it up in the Greek. That means dumb on purpose. So, yes, they have blinders on. She goes on to say, Cherie says, how could one not look at the beauty of nature and not... How could one look at... I don't get the grammar here. Look at the beauty of nature and not know that it could have been created by a supreme being. One of the negative comments wonders how a fossil could be found on Mount Everest. That find alone should prove God's existence. Yeah, and should prove a flood, too, to anybody with half a brain, you would think, you know. In fact, hundreds of the different, some unbelievers, I'm trying to read Cherie's letter here, passed down through their generation stories of a great flood. The way I see it, there is far more evidence to suggest God's existence than there is the hokey-pokey idea that we evolved from a rock. I would die for my Lord and Savior. Could the evolution believers say they would die for the God they believe in? Question mark? I doubt it. Thanks for letting me sound off. My prayers and love go out to the souls of the unbelievers, Cherie. Thank you, Cherie. I'm glad you enjoyed our materials, and also, my heart goes out to these unbelievers. They're not the enemy. I mean, it is a little annoying sometimes because they will lie. They will accuse me of things that are just simply not true. And I get, you should see some of the anti-Hovind websites. Man, oh, man. I get accused of all kinds of crazy things. Here we go. Michael T. writes, sir, I would just like to say thank you for all your work. You have been the issue of a lot of discussion between my wife and I. At first, I was completely against your work. Then I took time to actually watch your tapes and started to do some of my own research. You have really helped me a lot. Thank you so much. Have a great day, and God bless, Michael. Well, good. Michael, I don't want to get between you and your wife or anything, so you're welcome to discuss it, but if it causes an argument, you know, give me a call, and I'll tell her what you need to learn to tell your wife early in a marriage. You say, yes, dear, you're right. Okay. Learn those words, and your marriage goes much better. Here we go. One more testimony from Aaron, Aaron, who writes, I find it interesting that many of the people giving negative feedback are questioning Dr. Hovind on many of the exact things he explained so thoroughly in his series. They're criticizing regarding these things, saying, how do you account for, and then you put the subject in, he's such an idiot, when they never saw the material. I found it made perfect sense. Stupid atheists. But what great faith they have to hold true to such an idea in the face of evolution, in the face of evidence and reason. I agree, Aaron. I think you'd have to really be a fool to not be able to see the obvious that there must have been a designer. But that's what the Bible says in Psalm 14:1 and in Psalm 53:1. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. I really think you'd have to be a fool to believe that. Okay, Jonathan, tell them how to get AOL Instant Message in case they don't have that.
They can just go to AOL.com. That's AOL.com. I kind of say that slowly. Those kind of words just slur together, those letters. And it's an absolutely free download. They would just sign up, give themselves their own screen name, which can be any crazy set of words you want. And then they can just contact us through there, Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive, and I can pass these on to you.
And get a screen name that makes some sense, okay? That would help.
Although it is kind of fun sometimes to decipher what they really meant. Like the skate, surf, and more.
That took us 3 days to figure that out.
Yeah. Pretty interesting.
Okay. Here we go. Instant message time. If you want to get a hold of us, ask questions, here you go. Go to Dr. Dino Live, DrDino, on the AOL instant message and give us a message. Or call 850-479-DINO, and we'll put you ahead of the pile. Jonathan, we forgot to put the date. Today is June 6th. D-Day. You know, every time I see stuff about World War II or D-Day, I'm reminded of how it was evolution theory that started that war. Man, you think, like, how many million died in that war? Probably 20 million people died. One war. How Adolf Hitler thought the Germans were the superior race that deserved to rule the world. Now, Hitler's hit list actually had the Norwegians at the top of the list. They were the blonde-haired, blue-eyed, which, by the way, I am blonde-haired and blue-eyed Norwegian. What are you, Jonathan?
Whew, oh, my goodness. I guess I'd be classified as one of them little Heinz 57 mutts that you would find at Dogtown. Oh, my goodness.
Well, Samson's got to have some nationality ring to it.
Yeah, I've got more in me than my grandma's meatloaf, I think. There's so many different things that go into the Samson background, I guess.
Hmm. But you got blonde hair. Do you have blue eyes? I guess I haven't noticed.
I have hazel eyes. Blonde hair, hazel eyes.
Ooh, now, where does that fit on Hitler's list?
Well, it's kind of dark brown.
It's got to be up there pretty high. It's just the blonde hair. I mean, that's the most important thing, you know, for Hitler.
Yeah, but the hair is kind of getting darker as I get older. I guess it's the, what is it, artificial intelligence when your hair goes from blonde to something else? Is that one of them blonde jokes?
Oh, yeah, right.
A woman who dyes her hair, artificial intelligence.
One guy had gray hair, and he told me when your roots go down real deep on your hair, if it hits gray matter, it turns gray. And if it hits nothing, it turns loose. For bald people. I don't know. I doubt that's true. Okay, but Hitler thought the, you know, blonde-haired, blue-eyed Germans were superior and going to go beat up everybody and destroy, the, you know, take over the world and save the planet by letting the superior Aryan race take over. And today's the day our guys stormed the beach of Normandy and Swords Beach and other beaches and said, no, Hitler, I'm sorry, you're wrong. You're loony and get a life. Actually, get a death. They wanted for him. But and at the same token, the Japanese had been teaching for probably 40 years since, Once Darwin's book came out, it was translated to Japanese in the early 1860s. Maybe somebody can find the date for me, and I'll add that to the seminar. But when Darwin's book was translated to Japanese, the Japanese read that and said, oh, wow, one of the races has evolved the farthest, and obviously it's the Japanese. They even did scientific studies to show how Japanese sweat doesn't smell quite as bad as other people's sweat, which proves they've evolved farther, and they're less hairy. You know, they're far less Japanese people that have beards or mustaches or hair on their chest. You know, see those big sumo wrestlers, you know. But very, very few Japanese, or a much smaller percentage, have body hair like a lot of the rednecks up here in Alabama do. So they said, see, that's proof we've evolved farther. And so between the Japanese and the German, both thinking they were superior races of some kind, that led to them saying, well, hey, it's our duty to go take over the world and started World War II, and today's the day, D-Day, Normandy invasion, that we started to turn the tide, said, nope, you're not it. So tonight, Jonathan, if I can find my desk and get all my stuff done, I'm going to try to sit down and watch a bunch of D-Day movies. I'm assuming they're all playing today with John Wayne attacking the beach for the 40th time. Here we go. Tucker Braum writes in, AOL Instant Message, this June 6th of 2005. We are live today. You can get your message in right away. Tucker says, if we were taught that life started when we were born, rather than conception, would stem cell research be okay? I don't know that I'm against stem cell research to begin with. Now, it just depends where they're getting the stem cells. Have you read stuff on that, John?
Yeah, actually, it really blows my mind because there's so much research and so many experiments out there that have shown to be successful where they've used adult stem cells and have actually allowed people who were formerly crippled to walk again. They want to just harvest a lot of embryonic stem cells from embryos, basically, and throw a bunch of little babies, you know, unborn babies, I guess, just to the test tube here to get information from them, or biology from them, when they could just use the same thing from actually one of the most, I guess, plentiful sources for adult stem cells is liposuctioned fat. And we have tons of that in America.
More than tons, yeah.
I mean, everybody.
Thousands of tons.
You can get them from there, you can get them from your brain, you can get stem cells from your bones. They're all over the place. And there's so many more experiments that are successful with adult stem cells than there are with embryonic stem cells. So I don't know if we just got a bunch of baby-killing people out there who just are looking for a reason to lower the population or why they're going for the baby embryos.
Well, that's probably part of the reason. They have to have some reason to justify abortion and say, well, there's a use for that baby. You know, after all, we can use the stem cells.
It's crazy, too, because if you use embryonic stem cells from a baby, there's a chance that your body might reject those. However, if I take stem cells from my own bones, there's a much higher chance that my body will accept them and embrace the stem cells than reject them like they do with the embryos.
Well, the bigger picture that nobody's looking at is probably 95% of the diseases they're trying to cure with this can already be cured with vitamins and nutrition and minerals and other ways, you know, natural homeopathic methods of fixing the disease. So most of the diseases, you don't need to do what they're doing anyway. They're looking for an expensive way to fix the problem, you know, which concerns me. Anyway, so Tucker asks, if we were taught that life started when we were born rather than conception, would stem cell research be okay? No, if we were taught that, that wouldn't make it true. That's, I would say, Tucker, in the question, you got a problem with the way the question is phrased. You know. Break down, break down, break down. Okay. Okay, we'll be back. Get your questions in a minute. We'll get them in quick here to Dr. Dino Live. DrDinoLive. Thanks a lot.
Would you invite a total stranger into your house to play alone with your children?
Hi, kiddies.
Of course not. So why leave your defenseless children exposed to the perversion on the internet? Protect your family with Lifelight's filtered internet access. Do you want to speed up your dial-up connection and have the benefit of filtering as well? Use Lifelight's Browse Blast Filtered Web Accelerator, the only one on the market today. With Lifeline's filtered internet and Browse Blast Web Accelerator, you get the fastest connections. And Lifeline gives 10% of your monthly bill to your favorite ministry. Lifeline's accelerated service speeds up your connection almost 6 times that of normal dial-up. Filtered internet access costs as little as $9.95 per month. If you're happy with your current provider, or you just want to keep your email address, no problem. Get Browse Blast for just $5.95 per month. To sign up for Lifeline Internet or Browse Blast, call 1-800-511-4275. That's 1-800-511-4275.
Phone 800-311-2418, toll free. And your order will help support TruthRadio.com.
When Barbara and I were first married, we had what we call a mutual admiration society.
With Moments Together, here's Dennis Rainey.
We would compliment and praise each other for the new things we were discovering about one another every day. Today, with a house full of children, the situation is not quite the same. But the Mutual Admiration Society does reconvene. In fact, some evenings at the dinner table, we raise a question like, "What do you appreciate most about Dad?" In fact, one night, when the question was asked, our daughter Rebecca, who was then just about 5 years old, fessed up and said, "He sneaks chocolate with me." You know what? It's difficult to be depressed when a chorus of youngsters is cheering you on like that. To appreciate means to raise in value. Why don't you raise the value of your mate or your children today with some specific words of appreciation and praise?
Moments Together with Dennis Rainey is made possible by Regal Books, the Moments Together devotional series at Christian bookstores or regalbooks.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Here we are live, June 6th, D-Day, 2005. That was 1944. But we're 2005, and we're here to stir up trouble for the atheists. We take the position the Bible is true. Evolution is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. Jonathan, I really enjoy saying that, you know.
Because they really hate hearing it, too.
I remember as a kid how much I was taught evolution. I distinctly remember about third grade walking down the hallway having, I was a read-aholic. I mean, my mama taught kindergarten for years and taught me how to read probably when I was 4. And I have always loved to read. And I had been reading a book about cavemen when I was in third grade or fourth grade. But I remember walking down the hall in 110 Willow Court, East Peoria, Illinois, where I grew up. It's now changed to 216 Willow Court. I was at the house a few months ago. Did I tell you that, Eric? I went and saw the old house. Yeah. I was up there preaching at the Peoria Apache something or other, homeschool convention, and I drove over 10 miles to see the old homestead. Great. Not much has changed, you know.
You know what's sad, too? I mean, a lot of Christians out there don't understand how to defend their faith. I was one of them. I remember in, my freshman year of high school, I was in English class, and I was a freshman in high school, like 16, 17 years old. And the subject of dinosaurs came up, and I honestly said I don't believe they ever existed, because I knew that they were used so adamantly against, you know, Christians, the whole dinosaurs issue. And this ministry is so successful in educating people how to defend their faith and embrace dinosaurs as opposed to, you know, shun them and fear them.
Well, I remember walking down the hall. I just finished reading this book about cavemen, and they had said in the book that the humans have a tailbone. And that's proof that we used to have a tail.
Uh-huh.
I believed the whole thing, okay? Sucked it in. And that probably kept me from even considering becoming a Christian for many years. And that's what it's doing today to literally millions of people around the world. This evolution theory is a hindrance to the gospel. So, that's what did it for me, and then the Lord rescued me from that idiocy of thinking we used to have a tail. Age 16, I got saved, and then now travel and speak on creation evolution and really make the atheists upset. We're not trying to make them upset. We're trying to get them converted, for heaven's sake. Okay, Jonathan, how many legs does a dog have?
How many legs does a dog have?
Yeah.
Four.
Okay. What if you call the tail a leg? Now how many legs does a dog have?
Five.
Nope. Dog has four. Calling the tail a leg does not make it a leg.
Good point.
Good point, okay. So, Tucker's question. If we were taught life started when we were born rather than conception, would stem cell research be okay? No. Not if you're going to kill babies. The fact that you're no longer calling it a baby doesn't mean it's not a baby. You know, if you call a tail a leg, it's still the dog still has four legs. And calling it, you know, saying, well, it's not a baby yet, I'm sorry, that's not true. So, Tucker, I would rephrase the question, doesn't matter what you're taught, what is truth, okay? So stem cell research, if it involves killing an unborn baby, is not okay. It is murder, okay? Here we go, Spitfire Christian 01 says, what are the verses that support the canopy theory? Please don't give verses that teach there is water above the heavens, only scripture teaching water beneath stars and above atmosphere. I can't find these verses and read about the canopy in Dr. Brown's website. You can't find the verses. I don't know of any verses that say you have five toes on your feet either. But what does that matter? So, Spitfire, I guess I don't know of any other verses. Then that's why I say that in the canopy theory, Genesis 1, 6, and 7 says there was water above the firmament, and verse 20 tells us the firmament is where the birds fly. So you put two and two together, if there's water above where the birds fly, write back, Spitfire, and explain how you explain that verse, okay? Explain Genesis 1, verse 6 and 7, that there would be water under the firmament and water above the firmament. That is clearly what it says. And also maybe you could explain in there 2 Peter 3, where it says God made the earth standing out of the water and in the water. What does that mean? How can the earth be out of the water and in the water if there isn't a canopy, at least above the earth someplace? Now, if you mean above the stars also, I do happen to believe that Psalm 148 is the only reference I can find. There may be more. If you find one, let me know. But the only reference I can find is Psalm 148 that says there is still water above the heavens, plural. So there's probably water above where the stars are, even. The whole thing that we see as the universe might be one of those glass balls on God's dresser, you know, that you shake up once in a while and the snowflakes fly around. I still got to get a picture of one of those, Jonathan. I saw a couple in Canada the day before yesterday at the airport and didn't have my camera with me. So,
Canadian glass balls.
Yep. One had a pig in there. No, Cincinnati had them, too. They had a pig that flies. All over the airport, there are pigs with wings on them. So I asked one of the ladies there, I said, what is the deal with Cincinnati and pigs and flying? She said, well, Cincinnati started years ago as a town where they had a lot of hog farms and hog farmers and hog markets and became known as the pig town. Cincinnati. I said, what's the flying have to do with it? She said, I don't know where that started, but a lot of these pigs have wings. I said, okay. Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate your help. How do we get off on all that? Okay, Adam Brow writes in, I have a question. I'm sorry, Spitfire, let me finish here. As far as reading about the canopy on Dr. Brown's website, Dr. Walt Brown is a good friend of mine. He loves the Lord. I would consider him a good friend. I met with him at Arizona Phoenix Airport a couple years ago when I was out there speaking somewhere. And we talked for 3 hours, and I've talked to him on the phone many times since then. He does not believe there was a canopy of water above the atmosphere. I do. Okay? In spite of the fact that we disagree, I still sell his book and recommend his book and recommend his website. You can go back and listen to my program over the last 2 years. I have probably hundreds of times recommended people go to the website, creationscience.com. That is Walt Brown's website where you can read the entire book in the beginning. His entire book is right online. Walt Brown has like 20 grandchildren, and he stays right there at home in Phoenix. He's a retired colonel from the Air Force. His entire life now is devoted to that book, researching and reading and rewriting that book, which is now in the 8th edition, called In the Beginning. And it's very, very good, and I sell it and highly recommend it. However, he is wrong about the canopy. Okay? There was a canopy above the atmosphere, and he and I had quite an interesting talk last time on, I said, Dr. Brown, how do you explain the giant insects? Insects breathe through their skin. There's a real serious surface area to volume ratio problem. As an insect gets larger, it doesn't have enough skin to supply the oxygen to the volume it contains. He said, I know, I have a problem with that too. I said, I don't. There was greater air pressure because of the canopy. So if you watch my video too, which you can watch right online, how do they get to that now, Jonathan, on the new website?
Yeah, they just go straight to drdiner.com and they click on download, I believe. Actually, I'm going to have to check that out. The website is so new that I don't even know where everything is.
And you made it.
Yeah. As they go to drdiner.com and click on, downloads right there, they can watch video number two, actually listen to video number two and watch it as well.
There you go. Is that one of those where they get a picture every 3 seconds and then the guy's jerking around on stage?
No, they should be able to see it just fine.
Okay.
If they can't, they might have to download it first and then watch it.
Oh, but is it streaming while they watch it then? Or?
They can watch it as they download it, but it's not necessarily streaming.
Hmm. When we had the whole seminar up there for a while streaming, man, that ate up our T1 line in a flash, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That would eat up 30 T1 lines, wouldn't it?
Probably not 30, but it would be a lot of overhaul.
We need to go to a T12 or 20 or 50 or whatever's bigger, Okay. Let's see. So if that answers the question, I hope it does answer the question. If it does not, send back another letter. I disagree strongly with Walt Brown on the canopy. I think there had to be. And if you have another explanation for the verses about the water above the heavens, plural, I would like to hear what it is. Okay, Adam Growl writes, I have a question. In one of your debates with Michael Shermer, he made a statement about the so-called geologic column. He said it was constructed by creationists and not evolutionists. You did not have time to answer this. Could you comment on the statement he made? He also said that what creationists call evolution theory is nothing like evolution theory actually is. Could you comment on that? Okay, I'd be glad to comment on both of those. And anything else for that matter. If I have an opinion, I'll give it to you. Here we go. Michael Shermer is the editor of Skeptic Magazine. He lives in Southern California. He's a very nice guy on a personal level. He went to Pepperdine University to study for the ministry. Probably at the time when he was away from home, hormones are running high, and a very influential professor said, evolution's true, and you can get rid of God for your life. Oh, wow, okay, let's do that. So he rejected Christianity and accepted atheism, and now is the editor of a magazine called Skeptic Magazine. Do you also have a website, Jonathan,
Skeptic.com.
Okay. I debated Michael Shermer once with another guy, Carl Freak. I debated by myself once, but that was fun. We'll be back in a minute, folks, after the break, and we'll explain all this. Hang in there.
Spectre promoted this trial, this UN trial of Saddam Hussein, for a specific purpose, to soften us up for the idea of having the International Criminal Court.
By January this year in radio shows, I was warning people, this year it's terrorism. This year the issue will be terrorism, because the end goal is an international court of justice that will take away all criminal law jurisdiction in the guise or under the argument that you can't fight terrorism without a new international court of criminal justice. That's the end game.
They've just arrested over 500. 500 are being people, we don't know who they are being held incognito, without a trial, without bond.
are not arrogant enough to call Truth Radio the home of the truth, because the home of the truth is up there with the Lord in heaven. But www.truthradio.com is a reliable place to find information you won't find elsewhere. Stay tuned. Let me ask you, would you go to a fast food restaurant for filet mignon and lobster? Then why do you bother going to a politician for a solution to your problems based upon morality? Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. I read that in a letter to the editor, and I think it was worth passing on. And I would like to challenge your thinking to spend less time pleading with your congresspeople and more time getting people, your friends and others, to listen to Truth Radio. We need to build the audience for Truth Radio, and you can help through your emails, a brief reference to Truth Radio, through your conversations with friends, handing out little cards with Truth Radio mentioned. We appreciate all the help you can give. Thank you for listening, and bring along others with you.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live in Pensacola, Florida, this June 6th of 2005. And we're here explaining to people that the Bible is absolutely true and the evolution theory is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. And if you believe you came from a rock 4.6 billion years ago, we can help, okay? We have the technology to set you free. You can know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And we have got it right here. That's why they call it Truth Radio. That's why we're on here. Okay. Because we got it. God made the world. Okay. Adam writes and asks, in the debate with Michael Shermer, he made a statement about the geologic column. He said it was constructed by creationists, not evolutionists. Okay. As I was saying when the break came, I've debated Michael Shermer three times now. Once with another guy named Carl Fraser, a three-way debate. A second time was by myself. That is on my website as debate number 20, which you can order. Want to watch it? Was that 2 hours long, Jonathan? Or?
Oh yeah, those debates are 1.5, 2 hours long.
Yeah, a couple of them are 2.5 or 3 hours long of the 20 different. I've had done 92 debates now. I just found out I have another one scheduled.
They're very rare nowadays for some reason.
Very hard to find an opponent. Well, would you want to defend the idea that we all came from a rock?
No, I don't think anything would make me want to fight for that.
No, I don't want to do that either. That's the problem, okay? All right. To answer your question, the third debate was with Michael Shermer on the radio, just a half-hour debate. Was that on the infidel guy? They had him in there?
Well, I don't know if you ever debated him on the radio, not that I know of. I know you had a debate with him at UC Irvine, or Berkeley, and you had a debate with him, which you also mentioned earlier, with Kyle Frazier up in Massachusetts or Minnesota. Yeah, Minnesota.
Yeah, anyway, I'll be glad to debate him again anytime at the drop of a hat, and I will buy the hat. So he asked about Michael Shermer's made a statement about the geologic column, that it was constructed by creationists. That is partially true. They were not young Earth literal Bible-believing creationists. They were the compromisers of the early 1800s that caused this entire problem for the whole world. Christians who did not stick with the clear teaching of the Bible, they went off and compromised and said, oh, wow, maybe the earth is millions of years old, maybe there's a gap between verse 1 and verse 2. And that's where the problem started. So, yeah, I don't know where that started, but that really propelled the problem to world proportions. So, it is true, there were some people who claimed to be Christians or creationists in on the development of the geologic column. That is true. However, that has nothing to do about the truth of the geologic column. The geologic column is still baloney. It doesn't exist. One lady told me, a woman told me I was in a debate, she said, there is too a geologic column. It's been located in 26 places around the world. I said, wait. Let me explain what she's saying, folks. The geologic column predicts that 12 different index fossils will be found in a certain order. There are 26 places where the index fossils are found in that order. and they have therefore interpreted that as evidence that the geologic column exists in those places. And therein lies the problem. The fact that they find their index fossils in some kind of order, that's just obviously, I mean, out of 12 possibilities, you give it enough, dig enough holes, this possibility you may hit it right one time. And so there are tens of thousands of places where they do not find those fossils in that order. 26 places, according to her, where they did find them in that order. That is not proof the geologic column exists. It is proof those fossils exist in that, in a certain order in those locations. That is all it is proof of. That's certainly not proof for anything other than that. So the geologic column, it may have been some creationists involved in that. That's true. And actually, the geologic column was developed in 1830, probably before anybody would claim to be an evolutionist. Evolution theory didn't become popular until Darwin. I mean, it was around before then, but he's the guy who made it popular. So not many folks were claiming to be creationists at all in 1830. So I would say Shermer was, you know, partly right and mostly wrong on that one. Secondly, could you comment on the statement Shermer made? He also said, what creationists call evolution theory is nothing like evolution theory actually is. Could you comment on that? Oh, boy, I'd be glad to. Adam, here's the deal. Evolution theory consists of six different distinct, unrelated, but mandatory sequential events. I don't know if I could say that again, Jonathan. We'll have to listen to the tape and write that down. That was good. But first, there would have to be cosmic evolution, the origin of time, space, matter. Then there would have to be chemical evolution. The hydrogen is going to have to evolve to uranium and everything in between. Then there's going to have to be stellar evolution. The stars are going to have to evolve from dust. And that is, none of those are scientifically possible, let alone proven. Fourthly, there's going to have to be organic evolution, where life gets started from non-living material. Fifthly, there's going to be macroevolution, where an animal changes to a different kind of animal. And lastly, microevolution, where animals have changes within the same kind, like long hair and short hair and, you know, curly tail and straight tail. No question, that happens. The first five are religious, number six is pure science. Now, here's the problem. For over 100 years, the entire evolution theory was taught as one, you know, one event, okay? They would give kids examples of, wow, look at the dogs and wolves, how different they are, and yet how similar, see? And then they would go right into how that proves evolution, implying that the whole theory, all six steps, have been proven. Now, what I have done is broken it up into the obvious six distinct steps, and they don't like that. So recently, evolutionists have been grabbing and complaining, saying, oh, well, evolution doesn't include the Big Bang. It doesn't include the origin of life. It only includes things changing after they're here. Don't we get that all the time on this program, Jonathan?
Oh, yeah. Well, I wouldn't even say they're consistent on that. I mean, they redefine and shuffle around and act so crazy with their definitions much too often. It just blows my mind. I don't know if you could ever kind of pin them down on one definition of anything.
Probably you're correct. Probably could not. But because it is so obvious that the first five meanings of the word evolution are never observed, certainly not science, absolutely religious in nature, they have, in the last 10 or 15 years that this has happened, they have backpedaled quite a bit and tried to retreat into their little castle of evolution is only when, you know, when life, after life gets started. It doesn't include the origin of life, and it doesn't include the Big Bang, etc. Well, they're confused or they're lying, one or the other. Because I can show you hundreds of textbooks and technical journals where they do talk about all of these as if it's one big coherent theory. And I do in my seminar part one, I show quite a few textbooks that teach exactly that, including the Big Bang, okay, as part of evolution. Part three, at the beginning of part 3A of my 17-part seminar, we cover, we show them again and some new textbooks. And then part four, we give a whole lot more on the real meaning of the word evolution and why they carefully divide it into micro and macro, or why they try to blend micro and macro together as if it's all part of the same thing, and then try to assume that they can just ignore the others, okay, cosmic, chemical, stellar, et cetera. So Michael Shermer is absolutely wrong. I did characterize what the evolution theory teaches very carefully and correctly, and he is dead wrong about that one. I'll be glad to debate them any time, okay? I'll show you book after book after book. And if some evolutionist comes along and says, well, now, Hogan, Big Bang is not part of the theory, then what I typically say is, oh, Well, then would you please help me get this out of the textbooks, because they're putting it in the textbooks like it's part of the theory.
That's what one thing that really gets on my nerves, too. These evolutionists and atheists will say, well, this is, you know, abiogenesis is not part of evolution. Big Bang is not part of evolution. I just, I don't know if I showed you this yet, but I bought the latest scientific dictionary that they have, 2005. And if you look up evolution, it specifically mentions the evolution of the universe in this book that is supposed to be a leading scientific dictionary.
I need that to scan in, Jonathan.
It just blows my mind that even the evolutionists who say that we should listen to these authorities are contradicting them, and they won't even listen to those authorities. I mean, these authorities that they expect us to put our faith in, you know, are calling evolution, are saying that evolution also is attributed to the Big Bang and stuff.
Right.
And they don't even believe
how
that.
Are we supposed to know? Okay. You know, I hope that helps. Adam, feel free to write in again. Dan Dunkel writes, explain how the human race was diversely developed into all the different nationalities. Dan, I cover that for 20 minutes on video number 7, the possible theories about the human race being divided up, nationalities, etc. I think of all the theories that have been proposed, the only one that seems to make sense, both geographically, biologically, and just common sense, is that at the Tower of Babel, when God confused the languages, the people spread out, speaking their own language. Genesis chapter 10 and 11 tells the story. And that, really, there aren't races. I hesitate to use the word race, even, because there's a human race, okay? And on video 7, I go through this and show lots of pictures, which you can't see on the radio here. But I do lots of pictures, show a bunch of cows, okay? Yeah, white cows, brown cows, black cows, etc., and say, are these different races of cows? People say, no, they're cows. They're just different skin colors. I say, precisely the point. They all look the same in the meat locker. They all taste the same on the hamburger. They are simply different skin colors. And that's what we have with the humans. You have the human race, and we have different skin colors within that race, but it only goes, you know, skin deep. They all look the same under that. There are some racial or some ethnic differences, like different cheekbones and brow ridges of different people on Earth. The Indians tend to have, some Indians have higher cheekbones. Aborigines have smaller calf muscles. And Chinese have slanted eyes. You know, sure, there are no question there are what we call racial distinctions, but technically, you know, they're all interfertile, quite obviously, and there's just one race called the human race. Okay, who's on the phone there, John?
We've got Jared on the phone.
Jared?
Yep. Yes.
Yes, Jared, go ahead.
Hey, Kent. It's been a while.
No, you never got your own program yet, did you?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just don't have the time or the money.
And you didn't get converted yet either?
Nope.
Okay.
Not as far as I can tell.
Hey, we're going to work on that. We will never give up until you die. Then we have to give up at that point.
Wonderful. Okay. You threw out about 8 or 10 things that I really got upset at just now.
Oh no. We would never
want
to. We don't want to do that to anybody. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So one of these is about Michael Shermer. Now, I happen to be a fan of Michael Shermer, and the characterization of his sort of deconversion I found pretty cartoon-like.
Okay.
Did you read the book, How We Believe, Science, Skepticism, and the Search for God by Michael Shermer?
Uh-huh.
He lays out on the first 10 pages how he kind of went through his deconversion from Christianity to skepticism.
Okay.
And it wasn't like how you characterized it at all. He wasn't just a Christian that met a particular professor and the professor told him that he could, like, get away from God via evolution and just decided to deconvert. He lays out explicitly the problems that he had the whole time that he was a Christian. And he talks about how he just kind of ignored them for a while, like Christians always do, you know?
And then
he talks about this particular book that, what is this? I think Lindsay wrote it. The Late Great Planet Earth.
By Hal Lindsay?
Yeah. So Shermer's talking about that book and how great he thinks it was. And a professor, Richard Hardison, was a professor that Shermer knew, and he gave the book, he told Hardison to read it. And that's what happened, Hardison came back and rebutted that book, and that's what propelled Shermer on his way. It wasn't about evolution, and it wasn't about really even God. It was about a particular way of thinking that Shermer had fallen into, and his professor had exposed to him what was wrong with his thinking.
Well, it may be true that there are errors in Hal Lindsay's characterization of end times, okay? I think there probably are problems with a variety of people's, you know, Christians' belief about end times and what's going to happen. However, I asked Michael Shermer in the debate, you can watch it for yourself.
I have watched it many, many times.
I'm trying to take that back. I think it was before the debate, or after the debate, he and I were talking. But I asked him, you know, is it a coincidence that at this time, this was, you know, freshman year in college, you're going through hormone rage like everybody is at that time, and you're looking for a way to get rid of God anyway? He said, oh, I don't know if I'd say that. I said, I know you wouldn't say that, but, you know, would you consider that as a possibility? You know, this is when many, many people do abandon Christianity, the freshman or sophomore year in college.
Yeah, there's a problem with that analogy, Kent.
What is that?
Correlation versus causation.
Well, you're right. It may not, you know, just because the sun comes up doesn't mean that's why trees are green, you know.
That's not what I mean. Whenever people go to college, they start thinking in many different ways than they had prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about whether they believe in God or not. They go through all kinds of changes in their life. And yeah, you might have a point about how that's when people, you know, change the way they think about God. But it doesn't mean that that's why they change the way they think about God.
Well, you don't think the fact that their drive to be immoral may have any correlation with this at all? It's purely just scientific. Oh, wow, we evolved. I'm an animal. Therefore, I can act like an animal and go party. There's no connection, you don't think?
I do not say there's no connection. That's why I'm saying it's correlation versus causation. I just don't think
sure.
that it causes that necessarily.
Well,
for some people, it might. I know in my case, it didn't.
Okay, well, Julian Huxley, the founder of UNESCO and Thomas Huxley's grandson and brother or cousin of Aldous Huxley, the famous one, started the drug movement in the 60s and told everybody to take LSD to expand your mind.
Uh-huh.
Julian Huxley said, he said the reason we accepted, the reason we left at Origin of Species was the idea of God interfered with our sexual mores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm familiar with this, yeah.
Yeah, that's my quote. I'll give the reference for the quote on video number 4.
Yeah, but just because he said that doesn't mean other people are the same way.
Oh, that's correct. You're right. Many people do reject creation and accept evolution because they think they have seen the light and found scientific evidence for evolution. They may have.
Yeah, and there are many Christians who believe in evolution as well.
Sure. And there are probably many, many orders of magnitude more who go the other direction and accept Christianity. I mean, there are millions of folks who would claim the Bible is literally true. The last, I believe it was U.S. News and World Report in late 2003 or early 2004, did a survey and said now 57% of the population of the United States believes the Earth is less than 10,000 years old and God made it.
Right, right. Are you arguing from appeal to population?
Am I what now?
Are you appealing to arguing from what people think in general?
No, I'm pointing out that in spite of 40 years of intensive propaganda in the schools to teach one theory only, it's not working. The people aren't buying it.
Oh, how about the intensive propaganda put out by all different kinds of religions at the same time?
I know. If they would all just listen to me and become Baptists, we could solve all this problem.
Oh, that's awesome. I think the Methodists and the Pentecostals, et cetera, would have something to say about that.
I used to be a Methodist, but if you keep reading your Bible, you can be a Baptist. That's the way it works.
I think if you keep reading your Bible, you'll be an atheist like me.
I used to be a Pentecostal, too, so.
Did, really?
Yeah, that's what
Did
I
you
wrote.
Roll on the floor and speak in tongues?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Bark like a dog.
I'm glad you escaped that, Jonathan.
Me, too. Actually, well, it's a completely different subject, but if you ever go to a Pentecostal church, ask them to speak or preach a sermon about speaking in tongues and see how, I guess, materialist it is. There's absolutely nothing to them.
You mean to justify it based on the New Testament writings?
Justify it on anything. Which is completely out, you know, off the topic. I was actually talking to somebody about that yesterday. They never even talked about that in the Pentecostal churches I grew up.
Their position on spiritual gifts is pretty weak, I think. That's a whole other ball of wax.
Well, there are thousands of different topics to discuss in the world, and I have chosen this one dragon to slay of evolution.
Sure, and I wanted to ask you a question about that too, Kent, because the first three times that I called into your show, I chose to talk about the Bible. And it's, by the end of the third show, you told me that the Bible, well, you said specifically eschatology, was not your specialty and that you wanted to keep the creation and evolution, correct?
Well, that is. The program is about creation. It's called the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Yes.
Okay. Does that mean that the Bible is not open to criticism on your show?
Oh, no, the Bible is, but there are 31,000 verses in the Bible, and I can't be an expert on each topic. There are hundreds of topics discussed in the Bible, too. I don't know that I could quote the whole genealogy from Adam to Jesus, either.
Thank God you can't. That'd be kind of obnoxious to be able to
right,
do that.
Right.
But, Okay, so I'm not allowed to criticize the Bible when I call in, or
well,
am
you,
I?
You are, but my point was, if somebody wants to criticize, like Farrell Till up in Illinois that I debated,
yeah,
he wants
I know
to
about
do,
that, too.
He wants to do a debate on the accuracy of the Bible.
Sure.
I said, well, Farrell, is that right?
Yeah.
I said, let's narrow it down to one topic. I can't end that topic on all. We'll be back after the break. Hang in there. We'll discuss this in a minute.
Okay.
If you have always wanted to understand a little bit more about law, but not make a deep study of it enough that you would get a degree or be admitted to a bar, but you'd still like to know just a little bit more than you have earlier learned, here's the perfect solution for you. We have received a number of copies of a booklet entitled Our American Common Law. This booklet is written by Howard Fisher and Dale Pond. If you'd like a copy, this just under 30 pages will really give you a practical grasp of what the common law is and how it fits into your daily affairs as it relates to courts and jurisprudence. Our address is Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. No price, just donate to Truth Radio. We'll send it to you. Thanks. Looking forward to hearing from you soon.
Mr. Johnson, let me explain this again. Your mortgage is $1,000.
And I sent you two $500 bills.
That was Monopoly money. Just like the 1,000 Bongo Burger bucks you sent last month, they're not worth anything.
Excuse me, but you can buy one fry and get another free.
Mr. Johnson, we only accept real money.
Monopoly money, Bongo bucks, dollar bills, they're all the same. Come on, they all have dollar signs on them.
They may all claim to be a form of payment, but only one of them has value here.
That is so narrow. Well, if everyone was just a little more open to different forms of payment, we would all be a lot richer.
The truth is, you need to use real money or you will lose your home.
There comes a point in life when we have to deal with reality. Believing what you want to believe about God may feel good during your lifetime, but in the end, only truth will matter. Make sure what you believe is true. A message from Lifeline Productions, 1-800-523-8669, lifelinepro.com.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live, January 6th, D-Day, 2004. And we're defending the Bible's position as being correct and the evolution theory as being dumb. And we have a caller who wanted to know about criticizing the Bible, and the answer is yes. However, because there are 31,000 verses, I ask that you keep the criticism of the Bible to verses related to creation, evolution, stuff like that, because I don't know that I could defend. You know, what about this genealogy that has George in here and this one that doesn't? You know, that's not my specialty. Does that make sense?
It does, but usually whenever you introduce the show, you say things like, defending the position of the Bible is absolutely true and scientifically accurate.
That is correct.
Okay, if you're defending the view that the Bible is absolutely true and scientifically accurate, shouldn't people be able to attack it about its accuracy?
Well, if I defended the view that we had a fortress that was impenetrable and my job was the, you know, electronic security of the fortress, but somebody else's job was the mechanical security of the fortress, I would defer you to somebody else to answer questions about, you know, their specialty. So, no, my specialty is not, you know, genealogies. My specialty is creation evolution. That's the only reason. Yes, I do believe it's infallible. I don't believe there are any errors or mistakes, but I don't know that you couldn't come up with something that is outside my field of expertise that I would have to do some research on before I could find an answer.
Well, I don't understand how you can say that you're defending the stance of the Bible is absolutely true.
Okay.
Then, in which way are you defending that position?
Well, I'm defending my piece of the wall. My piece of the wall is the creation part. It is correct.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay.
Now.
I can't defend the whole wall, but I believe the whole wall is solid.
Okay. I don't have a healthy rebuttal of that, so I'm going to leave it be for now.
Okay. Go ahead.
Now, this thing about Shermer.
Yes.
Are you going to see the point about that?
That Michael Shermer claims in his book that there were other reasons he rejected Christianity besides hormones?
Sure.
I'm sure he claims that in his book. There's no question.
So are you calling him a liar?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that he would ever concede all the real reasons, or anybody would concede the real reasons. Why did you reject Christianity?
Why did I personally?
Yes.
Because it stopped making sense to me.
And the idea we came from Iraq makes more sense to you.
First of all, that is a ridiculous characterization of evolutionary theory, and I really wish that you would stop saying that.
I wish the books would stop printing it, and I wouldn't have to say it. The books do say that over and over and over. You want me to read you one?
Part of the problem with evolutionary theory before I started learning about it when I was a Christian was because I thought of it in that ridiculous way.
It is ridiculous.
I ignored all of the actual arguments and just focused on the straw man characterization of it.
So, are you saying there is good evidence for evolution?
Absolutely.
Please show it to me.
Okay, let's talk about the geological column then.
Okay, what geological column? Where is it? I want to go see it.
Okay, if I gave you an example of a place on the Earth where the geological column was well represented, would you stop saying that the geological column doesn't exist?
How would you know it's well represented there? Is it because
it has, like, the Devonian, the Ordovician, the Permian, the Trias, the Jurassic, all of it represented? If I showed you that...
Wait, I want to find out. How do you know a rock layer is Devonian? How do you tell?
I'm not a geologist.
But you're saying you can defend it. I mean, if you...
No, I'm asking you I'm asking you a question. I'm asking, if I give you a place on the Earth where the entire geologic column is well represented, will you concede the point?
No, you may have missed the first part of the program where I talked about that very thing earlier.
I did miss it, yes.
Okay. Some lady told me in a debate that there are 26 places on planet Earth where the geologic column can be shown.
Okay.
I said, now, ma'am, do you mean there are 26 places on Earth where the 12 index fossils are in your predicted order? She said, yes. I said, that is not showing me the geologic column. If there are 12 index fossils that represent these 12 layers of the geologic column, just pure random chance is going to say that occasionally they may happen to be in that order. But 99% of the time, they are not found in that order. So, no. For you to show me a place where 12 fossils are in order does not show me the geologic column.
Hold on a second. They're not in what order?
The order that they predict from Cambrian with the trilobites up to, you know, modern times with humans.
Well, what do you mean they're not in that order? Are you telling me that there's entire eras that are mismatched?
Okay, let's take an example. Have you ever heard of Chief Mountain?
No.
Montana. Okay, how about the Matterhorn in Switzerland?
No. I'm not a geologist.
Okay. Well, you're saying you want to defend the geologic column and you're not a geologist.
No. I'm asking you, if I did, would you concede the point?
I would say, and I'm trying to say, that all you could ever show me is where you can't show me the geologic column in order because you don't know and nobody knows how to tell the difference between Ordovician limestone and Devonian limestone and Cambrian limestone and Permian limestone. They're all limestone. The only thing that makes them different is the index fossils. The fossils that they have given some kind of arbitrary name to and said, oh, this fossil belongs in this layer. If you find a rock layer that contains that fossil, the layer of rock is dated by the fossil, and at the same time, the fossil has already been dated by the rock layer.
That's also a mischaracterization of the way
that's exactly what happens. Circular reasoning.
Now, that's something that I've read about, and from what I see so far, your characterization is not correct, but I can't defend that quite yet.
Okay.
What I'm asking you is, if I give you solid proof that you're wrong, will you concede the point?
Oh, if you give me solid proof I'm wrong on anything, I'll concede any point, yes.
Oh, really?
Sure.
So you'll change your seminar series?
I would certainly change my seminar series. I
haven't people already pointed out errors to you in your seminar series that you have not corrected?
I'm not aware of any I haven't corrected. If you know some, let me know, but I certainly will correct anything that somebody shows me I'm wrong on.
I'm being very specific about you. You're giving me your word that if I show you something that what you say is wrong, you will change all of your presentations on it.
I will take out anything from my seminar that is incorrect. That would be common sense. Of course I would do that.
Okay. What I'm getting at here is...
Wait, are you going to leave it hanging there? Do you know something that's wrong, or are you just throwing that out as an open challenge?
Oh, I know of several things that are wrong, but I'm so flustered right now I don't have my references in front of me.
Okay. Well, calm down. It's okay. Jonathan, I'm looking for the biology textbook that has the whale on the front of it. They just call it the whale book. Somebody's got it out of the library, apparently.
I know the book you're talking about. Go ahead.
Okay. In that book, look up the text about the early history of Earth is the top of the page with a picture of lightning strikes on the volcanic covered Earth. It says, and I quote, Earth is thought to have formed about 4.6 billion years ago. It was very different from Earth today. Illustration 17.1 illustrates what it may have looked like. Scientists theorize that Earth began as a hot ball of rock. Meteorites bombarded. No, that's the other, that's dynamics of life. This is
where are you getting at, Ken?
I'm pointing out, they do speech as part of the evolution theory, that Earth cooled down 4.6 billion years ago. It began as a hot ball of rock. 3.9 billion years ago, it cooled enough for water vapor to condense, and Earth was experiencing rainstorms. Eventually, the accumulated rainfall formed Earth's oceans. It is in these oceans, 3.5 billion years ago, that scientists believe the first living organisms appeared.
Right.
So all of that about us coming from a rock, that is, I'm precisely correct that that is what the textbooks teach.
Okay, first of all, somebody else has already countered you about this, about how it would be more accurate to say rocks than rock. You did concede that point before, right?
Wait, I missed all that. It came from a rock or came from rocks, plural?
Rocks, plural.
Oh, we had a mother and a father rock. It would take two. You're probably right. It would take two.
Oh, that's hilarious. Okay.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
No, it's very amusing. It's just amazing that you can keep saying stuff like that. And when people counter you about this kind of stuff, and you never give it up.
I don't know. It sounds worse. Would you prefer him to say you come from rocks?
Why not just say we came from soup? That's closer to the truth.
Where'd the soup come from?
It doesn't matter.
It does, too.
Apparently from rocks.
The soup came from melted rocks.
Why not say we came from a dot?
Okay, where'd that come from?
If you're going to, the reason that you're doing this is not because you're trying to be accurate to the evolutionary theory. You're trying to do this because you're trying to make it this cartoon straw man version of the argument.
Yeah,
if you're really trying to go back to the origins of what you think that all evolutionists say is all part of the same theory with the Big Bang and stuff, you'd say we came from a singularity. But if you say we came from a singularity, it doesn't make people, it doesn't give people the impression in their minds of how ludicrous evolutionary theory is.
Right.
That's why you do it.
Correct. I would say it's ludicrous on many levels, and I'm trying to point out how ludicrous it is. You are correct, and I really enjoy showing how ludicrous it is. I'm having a lot of fun. I just want you to know, okay?
No, I bet you are.
I enjoy it very much. Keep in mind, I have for many, many years been paying for all the evolution theory to be taught in the schools.
Yeah, I pay for a lot of things that I don't want to be paid for, too.
Sure, and I have a right to buy time on the radio and buy staff time and buy and spread my opinion. This is America, the land of the free and the home of the slave.
Sure.
Right.
I'm not contesting any of that. I'm really concerned about accuracy, and I'm trying to drive home the point here that if you are defeated on a particular point, that you have to change what you say to be intellectually honest.
Oh, I will. Show me what I'm defeated on. Where am I defeated?
Okay, I'm just trying to establish this first because I'm going to change the way that I call into your program.
Right, that is a given. If you defeat me on a point and you find out I'm wrong, I will change. I promise you and the whole world who's listening, I will change.
Okay, fine. Then I think on the fifth or sixth phone call, whenever we talked before about the Big Bang theory and evolution and how the two are related and all this stuff, you conceded that the Big Bang was not part of biological evolution.
Obviously. I didn't say it's not. Wait. That's not to say it's not part of evolution theory. It's not part of biological evolution. That's correct. But it is taught as part of the general theory of evolution.
Whenever I pointed out that the reason they put these stories about the molten earth and the rocks and the rain and the lightning and the volcanoes and stuff, the reason they put this into the biology textbooks is to give people an introduction to where the theory starts. It's not part of the theory, and you conceded that point.
You are straining at a gnat.
No, I'm trying to alter the way that you do your presentations.
Well, call Richard and say you want the hour before me to prepare people for the intensive brainwashing they're going to get by watching my program. Jonathan, I'm still looking for that whale book. That's the wrong whale. That doesn't matter. Okay. Anyway, because I don't have the page number. I was just looking through my presentation note, and I noticed, since I want accuracy, that I don't have the page reference of which book that is.
That's fine. I'll take your word on it. Whatever.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Anyway, Biology, Dynamics of Life. It's like this one, but it's got a different killer whale on the front. It's a Princess Hall. No, that's Glencoe. Doesn't matter. All right. Anyway, so what's your point now? Do you know of anything about evolution that would make... Do you have any points to support the theory that we came from a soup, okay, or a dot?
You mean like abiogenesis?
Well, you said I should characterize it as we came from a dot or came from soup instead of a rock, or rocks, you know, on a mother and father rock, but what evidence do you have that we came from soup, then?
Abiogenesis is fairly poorly supported, and I think that what Dr. Rainbow told you in his debate is a pretty good concession of that. Do you remember what he said?
It's a concession that it's poorly supported. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
I agree. By poorly supported, would you say that would rise to the level of not part of science and should not be in textbooks?
I would say I would call it something like proto-science.
Proto-science. How about fairy tale? Is that better? Or is that too blunt?
I think it's a little bit too blunt.
Too blunt. Fairy tale.
I think that teaching kids about abiogenesis is probably not a good idea.
But do you agree that they do it?
Oh, sure.
Okay, so
I think a lot of crap is taught in school that shouldn't be taught.
Would you at least help me get that out? We could agree on that. That should be out of the books.
Well, like I said before, I mean, I don't think that your efforts to get things out of the textbooks and changing pedagogy is really going to be very effective, because you do things in such a way that if somebody isn't already on their side, they're not going to listen to what you're saying. Like, as far as people on school boards are concerned.
Oh, I don't know.
They are not going to just switch over to the creationist bandwagon. And that's pretty much what you're promoting.
You'd be surprised how many people on school boards watch my seminar and call me and say, how can I fix this in my school? We're making a real impact on the school boards.
Yeah, but they're people that are already creationists.
Well, what difference would that make? Are you saying if a person is a creationist, they're no longer qualified to be intelligent?
That is. I will not say that. I've met way too many intelligent creationists to say that.
Well, good. Now, there are people you agree in evolutionist camp who would disagree with your statement and say, no.
Sure.
If you believe in creation, you're automatically disqualified from having a brain. I mean, there are people who believe
that. People are idiots when you say that. They just obviously have an intelligent creationist.
All right. We got a bunch of folks waiting on instant message here. One last point here. Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, I do want to make one point, and that is about the thing with the trilobites before that I was talking with Jonathan and you about.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to give you a concession. The statement that I made about trilobites existing today, being a very serious challenge or really upsetting evolutionists, I'm taking that back.
So if they found living trilobites, that still would not change evolution theory?
What it would do is it would cause a minor problem in the ways that...
But it's not completely unembraceable, is what you're saying.
Exactly. And Jonathan, and you were making that point, and I was wrong, and you were right, and that's all I wanted to say about that.
That's
I was
good.
Being a little bit too dogmatic about
well,
that.
Well, come on down. I'll buy you chicken parmesan, and we can talk about it over dinner.
There you go.
I'm vegetarian, sorry.
I'll buy you a vegetarian chicken.
The chickens ate vegetables. That's how they... Corn, I mean.
But anyway, what I wanted to say about that was that if they discovered trilobites living today, it would be a problem in the sense that... It would demand an explanation for why we're not getting signals from them in the geologic column. But it wouldn't be a falsification point.
Okay, why did we not get signals of coelacanth for 325 million years?
Yeah, I actually talked about an evolutionary biologist about that very recently, in fact. There's good reason for that.
There is?
As far as I understand, all deep-sea marine animals are poorly represented in the recent geological strata. It's not just trilobites. I mean, it's not just coelacanth.
But do you realize your entire statement just then is based on the assumption that evolution is true?
Sure, and that's exactly why I wasn't going to talk about it until you brought it up, because it's not the kind of thing that I want to debate on.
All right, well, good.
However, one more thing. The thing about hominids being found in Cambrian rock, that is a falsification point. And that's why I have not responded yet about the KBS test thing and the...
Yeah, but wait a minute. I still want to know, how do you know a rock is Cambrian?
If you want me to go research that and look it up, I will.
I do. I want you to tell me, how does anybody on planet Earth determine that a rock is Cambrian or Jurassic?
Do you honestly think there is no way to tell that a rock is Cambrian?
I believe the only way that they can tell a rock is Cambrian is by the index fossils, which goes to the circular reasoning argument I mentioned very clearly on video number 4.
Okay, even if I gave you that, what I would probably guess, if I just had to purely guess, I would guess that there is a type of Cambrian animal that defines that strata layer.
There, you're conceding my point. The fossils determine the rock layer.
Yeah, and why is this possible, Kent?
The whole thing is baloney. It's circular.
Why is it possible to do that?
It's not possible to do that. All that is based on the assumption that there's an order of the way animals evolved.
Exactly, and you said the other day that there was no pattern to the geological record. How is it the case that people can figure out what strata it is by the fossils in it, if that's not the case?
How can you not see what you're saying?
How can you not see what you're saying? You're saying there's no pattern to the geologic column at all.
No. If you find a bunch of trilobites in one rock layer and decide to call that Cambrian because of the trilobite, you are dating the layer by the fossil. But then they turn around and date the fossil by the layer. It is absolute circular reasoning and wouldn't hold up 2 seconds in a court of law.
Do you want to talk? Okay, I'm going to call in later, like tomorrow or the next day.
Sure, that'd be great.
Yeah, okay. Find out.
Okay, I want to know how they tell a rock is Cambrian. Please tell me. Okay, thanks for calling. You're welcome to call anytime. All right, Jonathan, folks want to call in, they can get on the program. 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, extension 136. We only have one line into the program. We are sorry about that. And someday we're going to fix it. One of my brother's fixing them. Okay, he's not back. It needs to be a while. Okay, break time. We'll come back after the break and get your AOL instant messages. Keep coming. We'll get to as many as we can. Thanks a lot.
One of the greatest helpers for Truth Radio in the past has been that those of you who have signed up for Lifeline telephone service, long-distance service, and local service, internet service, and now the Lifeline company, Lifeline Communications, is offering service through T-Mobile. If you have a cell phone, or if you would like to have a cell phone service that really works and has really modern, neat equipment and a great approach to this whole business of cell phone, and you want to help Truth Radio at the same time, then may I recommend that you call 800, that's 800-311-2418, that's 800-311-2418. And tell them that you want to sign up for T-Mobile through Lifeline. Phone 1-800-311-2418. Your participation with Lifeline will help Truth Radio.
Sharon Bowes knew she wanted to work with children. After all, it's what she went to college for. It's what she'd spent the past decade doing. And she wanted to work in a Christian setting. She'd heard about InterCristo on the radio and gave it a try.
I signed up for the free listing. I wasn't very hopeful nor expecting much, but I received more than 90 listings.
Sharon's first choice was to stay in the U.S., but she also indicated she'd be willing to work overseas for the right position.
In less than 2 weeks, I heard from a Christian school in Egypt. I seriously doubt I would have ever heard of or even thought about a teaching position in Egypt if InterCristo hadn't connected us. My position is salary, which not only means I can go, but I can stay. God is good and knows what we need as well as what He wants us to do.
What does God want you to do? Find out if InterCristo can help you. Get online at InterCristo.com and see what opportunities are available to you. That's InterCristo.com. InterCristo, the Christian career specialists, a Christo ministry.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half, starting at 4:30 Central Time. This is June 6th, D-Day, 2004. Actually, D-Day was 1944, but this is 2004. And we are grateful for the Americans who defended our freedom against the evolutionist Adolf Hitler, who wanted to control the world like Pinky and the Brain. Okay? So we were talking about the geologic column. I have a book in front of me that got wet. Oh, Jonathan, I was trying to find during the break. Shows an atlas of North America, so the pages are not turning very well. However, there is in here a whole section of the geology of North America, and everything is divided up into, you know, where can you find the Cambrian layer on the surface? Like if you go to New Hampshire, you know, there is granite exposed right on the surface. Now, the evolutionist will say, well, yeah, see, the Cambrian layer is on the surface at that point. How do you know it's Cambrian or Precambrian, okay?
Fossil.
And other places, they'll have color, different color, and they'll say, oh, well, this is where the Ordovician is on the surface. How do you know it's Ordovician? How do you know any of them? Where did this whole dumb idea come from, anyway? See, the evolutionist is not willing to stop and question the basic assumptions his whole religion is based on. Now, they accuse the Christians of not being willing to question the Bible. They say, you just trust the Bible. And that's where, you know, your assumptions are based on the Bible and you trust it. Well, there's probably some legitimacy to that point, okay? I do trust the Bible. And many
of my...
Is that
Pangea right there?
Yeah, that's Pangea. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
This is a world atlas.
Guanaland and Pangea.
Yeah, Guanaland, Pangea, Eurasia, all that stuff. I'm going to try to find and get a picture for the seminar to add where they have all this stuff on the surface, you know. How do you know this is, you know, Cambrian? I would really like an answer to that, you know. Okay, well, I'll have to look at it. We got a lot of questions here. People calling in, writing in. Somebody on the phone? Who's on the phone now?
Yeah, we've got Eric on the phone.
Eric, yes, go ahead.
Ken.
Yes, sir. Now, which Eric is this?
This is the Eric from Minnesota.
Oh, you're the one that needs to get converted also.
I don't need to be converted.
We're gonna try anyway. Is that okay?
No. Because, Ken, you won't really be converted by me, so I'm not going to be converted by you. It's kind of established already. We're just talking here.
But if I'm right and you're wrong, somebody's got to...
You're not right.
Okay, go ahead. What's your question, Eric?
Okay. Now, first of all, I wanted to thank Jared for his hard work and all of this. You're a good man, Jared. Now, second thing is abortion is not murder.
It's not?
No. And if you look in the dictionary, the definition of murder is the unlawful killing. Now, it is not unlawful. Abortion is not. It is legal in this country, so it is not murder.
Well, let's dwell on that point for just a minute. When Hitler killed the Jews, was that murder? Do you realize 1936,
no.
the Germans...
No, that's why they had to establish the humanity laws, I think it was, as a higher court.
You're saying, legally speaking, abortion is not murder, according to the law.
Legally speaking, as opposed to...
It is not murder.
As opposed to morally speaking.
Well, I'm just asking. You know, Hitler, the German Supreme Court in 1936...
But we only have a little bit of time here, Ken.
See, this is why I want to do one point at a time. You're saying abortion's not murder. I disagree, and here's why. Hitler, the German Supreme Court declared Jews are not persons. Based on that decision, they said it's okay to kill the Jews because it's not murder because they're not a person. Our Supreme Court declared in 1973, Roe versus Wade, that the unborn child is not a person, and based on that decision only, some people are saying, well, see, then abortion isn't murder because it's not. The court has decided it's not a person yet. That's why I asked, was Hitler guilty of murder, or were his goons guilty of murder when they killed the Jews? And if not, why on earth did the world court, after the war, convict him of murder and hang him?
We're gonna move on, Ken.
Well, are you going to concede the point that abortion is murder?
I will respond to that later.
Okay. I'll stick with my point, abortion is murder.
You stated later a lot of the... earth things like that, you know, it's molten rock, and you said the word fairy tales.
Yeah, do you have a better word for that?
Now, Ken, when you use such things as a supernatural force to explain how the world got here, that's the real fairy tale. When you believe in a god and magic, that's when you... step into a fairy tale.
Wait, one point at a time. Now, come on, I pay for the program. I want you to follow my rule of one point at a time. Why would you equate God and magic in the same sentence? Define what you mean by
because
magic.
Because God does not, he had to create everything with magic, you see.
Well, define magic. I don't understand what you mean by magic.
Magic is the supernatural force of doing something that doesn't use the laws of science.
I don't know if a good illustration to get you to understand this point. The laws of science, things we can observe, study, and test, if that's what the word science means in the dictionary, then evolution certainly has magic involved, like life coming from non-living material, material coming from nothing, animals producing other than their kind. I mean, that's magic. Evolution and magic go together. I wouldn't say God and magic go together.
No, Ken, it's science. It's evolution is man's way of trying to prove that life happened without a supernatural force.
Well, man is just invoking his own magic, then.
No, it's not magic.
Okay, what existed or what exploded for the Big Bang?
Well, see, those things we're trying to find out.
According to man, what does man say right now?
It's the Big Bang.
What was there before the Big Bang, though?
We don't know. What's before God?
Come on, everything exploded
from
absolute...
You have the same problem either way.
No, because you're trying to invoke some natural, I guess, properties to God. That was a Discover magazine that says everything came from absolutely nothing, nowhere.
Yeah. Discover 2003.
That's what Discover says.
We don't know that.
That's what they say. So would you agree that is magic to say everything came from nowhere? And if you agree that that's magic, then you're saying that some of the leading evolutionists out there believe in magic.
Well, it's not magic if it's done scientifically.
Okay,
there has to be some science involved. Well,
hold on a second.
In everything being created.
What is the science of saying everything came from nothing?
Yeah, what science is involved?
What science is that?
Discover magazine said everything came from nothing. I'd like to know. Good point. Where's the science in that?
If there's no God and it comes from nothing, then it's science. Or if there's God and it comes from nothing, then it's not science.
Because God doesn't exist.
Where does everything? How does everything come from nothing and that be
we
science?
We don't know that yet. We don't know the
That's what they're saying.
Universe, and no one can really.
That's what they're saying. Front page of Discover magazine. Everything came from nothing.
Yeah, so that's our gripe. We don't mind somebody believing that, but I don't want to pay for this in the textbooks. Why don't
it's,
you?
It's
yeah.
science, Ken. That's
how
why.
Is that? Well, you haven't.
Wait. He just said it's science. You mean it is science that everything came from nothing?
Yes.
How?
There's much evidence.
How?
There's much evidence that everything came from nothing. Eric, stop and think what you're saying.
No, I have. I've been thinking. I've been listening to your show. I've been thinking. You've only pushed me to think even further on this. Every word you speak, Ken, I've been thinking.
Well, how is that?
I've never believed stronger in evolution now.
Well, you keep saying that everything coming from nothing with no God is science. However, everything coming from nothing with a God is magic. What's the distinguishing factor here? How is everything
God,
coming?
God is the distinguishing factor because he is
a
supernatural force that
okay.
you just use to explain everything.
Not necessarily.
He's got a good point.
But how is saying the Big Bang, everything came from nothing?
Because it's a theory. We try to use science to explain it.
Well, hold on a second. How is that science? You're circular reasoning here. You're saying yes,
because
it's science.
Because we have evidence that, I mean, there's a guy who had an ad on one of your shows, and he tried to say that, like, the origin of the universe, that we have good evidence that it all... The universe goes to one point.
Okay, but that's irrelevant. How does that one point come from nothing and still be science? That's what I'm getting to.
It's not known, but we try to use science and evidence to explain it instead of just saying God exists.
Well, hold on a second.
That's all
that happens. What is the evidence then? Because you keep saying that there's evidence. You keep saying that it's science. What is the evidence?
Well, the evidence of the Big Bang.
No, the evidence that everything came from nothing.
Well, there is none yet.
There's none yet.
Then why are you saying
it's
science?
But we're trying to explain it with science.
So something that has no evidence. Hold on a second. Something that has absolutely no evidence can be science. Therefore, in your own person, hold on a second. You just said there is no evidence for it, yet it's still science. So by your own confession, on your own confession, creation is science. Even if you think there's no evidence for it, it's still science.
Why is it science? You're just using God to explain everything.
Well, you're just saying it popped out of nowhere. What's the difference?
No, we're not. There's plenty of evidence for evolution itself.
That's not what we're talking about.
We're not
talking about that. We're talking about everything popping out of nowhere. Where is the evidence for that?
We don't have any yet.
Okay, but it's still science.
Wait. Hold on, John. I don't want him to get too frustrated. We like him calling in, okay?
It's scientific. That's the thing.
Everything came from
nothing.
You confess that until we do find out where it came from and how it can come from nothing, since we haven't done that yet, okay, but you think we will, that's fine. I appreciate your faith. But until we do, we probably should not include it in science books. We should include it in philosophy books.
No.
It should be in science books.
You know, that's what they said, let's say, about, like, lightning. They just explain that away with
God.
Well,
hold on a second. You still haven't said how everything coming from nothing is science. I don't want to lose that point. You keep saying it's science. Everything popping out of nowhere from nothing.
People are trying to prove it scientifically. This is what I'm really trying to say.
So if I try to prove that gnomes exist scientifically, is that going to be science, even if I don't have evidence for it? If I want to prove that God exists, even if you think I don't have any evidence for it, are you still going to prove it's science?
I would like to do research on proving scientifically God exists. So do you think, until I can prove it, the taxpayer should fund me while I try to prove it?
We know that life evolves on Earth.
No, we don't. You might believe that, but nobody's ever seen a dog produce a non-dog.
Does speciation happen, Kent?
Speciation, sure, but now you're going to change the terms. Okay.
Well,
sure.
Yes.
Speciation
makes perfect sense that a speciation happens, evolution happens above the species level.
Now you just switched mid-sentence from science to religion, and you don't even see it.
I know where you're going with this, Kent.
Well, because I'm right. You're switching right in the middle of the sentence from science to religion, and you don't. Why can't you see that, or at least admit it?
I'm not going to admit anything. But I'd like to also talk about evidences while I'm still online here. And What really just drove me wild on Friday, or I know it was on Wednesday, there you go, was when you talked about dinosaurs are still alive. Now, I wanna read you a quote from your debate with Pharaoh Tiller. Most of my research has been on the bigger dinosaurs, 25 to 30 long, that are still alive, like Loch Ness Monster, Lake Champlain Monster, Moquelumbio, Acapulco, and Lake Okanagan. I could go on for hours just on that subject. There are still some dinosaurs still alive. I'm not saying there's millions, but there's a few. And the whole scenario of evolution is insane. Now,
okay, would you agree that there are tens of thousands of people who claim they have seen these creatures?
That's crap. There is not tens of thousands, Kent, and you know that.
According to, let me get the book in my hand. I'm over in my library here. Bernard,
yeah, well, how many people believe in aliens?
Oh, yeah, you're switching subjects. I said there are tens of thousands of people. Actually, there are over 20,000 people in the last 100 years, according to Bernard Heuvelmans, who was a famous scientist in France who wrote many books on this topic and was an evolutionist. And I'm going to have his book in my hand in a second here. Bernard Heuvelmans said there have been 20,000 reported sightings of living dinosaurs in the last 100 years.
Now, I actually just found that quote while you said that.
No, Ken,
my point is, it is true that many people claim they have seen them. Now, you choose to say they're all stupid. That's fine. I don't care what, you know, you can say that if you like. But my point was, 20,000 people claim they have seen them.
But that's not evidence.
But, so you know better than all 20,000 people that are making this claim. You are sitting in your armchair and are convinced that they're all dumb and you're right because you already have a theory that precludes their observations.
I mean, 20,000 testimonies is a strong suggestion. I mean, take, for example, court. They bring in testimonies. They go by testimonies and consistency of these testimonies and number of these testimonies to see what may, in fact, be more probable. So wouldn't you say it's pretty probable that maybe some large creatures out there that are unidentified by modern science are existing because we have over 20,000 testimonies of these things that are all very consistent?
And you just
want to throw away all those testimonies without even looking at them.
Do you believe in aliens, Kent?
You mean people come from Mexico without a green card across the wheel?
Extraterrestrial. You know?
I don't know. That's a whole other topic.
No, it isn't another topic.
Well,
it is. Just yes or no.
Eric, program's over. We'll talk about that tomorrow. I'll be here all week, much to the dismay of the evolutionists. Thanks for tuning in, folks. We'll try to get your calls earlier next time. And sorry for leaving you hanging. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
I have something in my hand I think you should own. I'm not going to try to tell you that you don't already have it, but you, I am confident, do not have it all in one piece like you would if you owned a copy of the Citizen's Rulebook. Do you have a copy? Well, this is in your shirt pocket. Full force research at your fingertips having to do with how to behave as a juror, the Constitution itself, the resources in here are just tremendous. And I'll be glad to send you a copy of this if you'll send me enough for postage plus a dollar. Whatever you want to contribute to Truth Radio, I'll send you a copy of the Citizen's Rulebook. Just get back to me at Post Office Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444, and it will be coming your way.
Isn't marriage supposed to be a 50-50 relationship?
With Moments Together, here's Dennis Rainey.
You do your part, and I'll do mine. Now, that sounds logical, doesn't it? But try it. You're going to be disappointed. Early in our marriage, Barbara and I tried this plan. I would give her affection only when I felt she had earned it by keeping the house running smoothly. She would show me affection only when I was getting home on time or working in her garden. The 50-50 plan for marriage doesn't work because we wind up focusing on what the other person is doing. And we start withholding love until the other person meets our expectations. I want you to think about God's love for us. He loves us 100%. Is your marriage on the 50-50 plan? If so, you need to pray that God's spirit of grace and sacrifice will be at the heart of your marriage.
Moments Together with Dennis Rainey is made possible by Regal Books, the Moments Together devotional series at Christian bookstores or regalbooks.com.
Listening to Truth Radio. Our address is Post Office Box 344.